Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hello, it's Kitty Martone, Healthy Gut Girl, coming to you live from deep inside your large intestine. And this is stuff your doctor should know. And Dr. Charles Martone is sitting here with me making me laugh because he's saying ridiculous things to me. Anyway, happy holidays, everyone. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving. Today, we have a really wonderful guest, but this is a really bittersweet interview. This guest, she's a biochemist, and her name is Benedicte Lersch. I hope I said that right. She's from Denmark. She is Danish. And I've been following her work for a little bit now, thanks to, of course, Constantine, who introduces me to just about every single person. I should start paying him to be my publicist or my manager. And he introduced me to her and thought she'd be really great for my listeners and for our estrogen dominant support group. And he is 100% correct. She deep dives into the world of thyroid, and she is guided, I should say, by her work with Dr. Ray Pete. Now, we recorded this episode this morning, and I wasn't even going to launch this episode for probably closer to Christmas. But when we finished recording, I got a message from Constantine and my admin, Sharon, who said that Dr. Ray Pete had passed. And I think he passed on Thanksgiving. And so this is such a bittersweet episode because Benedicta goes on to share with us what an influence he was on her own health. She will tell us all about that and how it transformed her whole life, and she became a biochemist and is helping people now with the same work that he did. And also, she was a client of his. She stumbled upon him and became a client. And so probably one of the few he's probably even taken since to the early 2000s. And so it's very sad. But first, I want to say a few things about Benedicta. She's a biochemist, a PhD. Her health approach is based on her own health journey and focuses on pro-metabolic diet principles and supplements. Her services address health issues like lack of energy, sleep problems, digestive problems, allergies, estrogen dominance, PMS, menopausal symptoms, and that's just like everyone in earshot of this recording, right? So it's great. She's really easy to listen to. She's got a beautiful, cute little accent, and she knows so much. So once again, take out a pencil and some paper and listen up, friends.
But yes. Where am I calling first? Where are you again?
I'm in Copenhagen, and that is for the American audience, it's in Scandinavia, so it's in Europe, mm-hmm. and it's in Denmark, which is a country of Scandinavia. So that's my country. And I'm Danish, so I should say that my English is not perfect. But I'll try my best.
It's fantastic. Are you kidding me? If I could speak any other language as good as you're speaking English right now, I'd be very happy.
Thank you.
I was excited to have you on because of your thyroid work and because of your connection to Ray Pete and everything you research and do, you know, regarding his work and your work. So you're a biochemist that helps people mm-hmm. in the way of thyroid regulation and hormone regulation, right?
Exactly.
What I want to know, why you, being a biochemist and knowing all that you know, why did you come down to thyroid?
It stems from my own health story, right? So I was very unlucky when I was like, maybe I was already born with it. And that's what I found, that that's actually the case for many people. They have just a slightly, they're born or they are struggling with their whole life for just a slightly tiny bit of hyperthyroidism, which is low thyroid function. And then something happens. So in my life, what happened was I went to France to work as an au pair. And there, you know, I lived not with the family, as some people do, but I lived separately in a very moldy and dark apartment. Mm. And I got first one infection, with fever and throat and infection and a severe cold. Mm-hmm. And then I got over that. And then the next cold came, you know, so I got very sick one time after the other, while staying in that dark, moldy apartment. And then I went back to Denmark after finishing that work there, and I didn't get well. So something had just triggered my thyroid to get really low. And it was a long process to actually find out that I had low thyroid function, because I was just, as is the case for many people that have low thyroid or just a little bit low thyroid, you're still normal on the blood test in many cases, or just a slightly bit low. So the doctors don't really do anything. So it was a long journey for me to actually get the diagnosis of low thyroid function. Yeah.
So, can I ask how old you were when you were when you were an au pair?
I was just finishing high school, so
Okay.
19, 20, so really young, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you shouldn't be filled with have a huge range of hormonal imbalances when you're 20 years old.
Right.
So I actually my period stopped completely,
Wow.
so I had a lot of imbalances.
And so you attribute that to multiple things, or do you think that the mold on its own is capable of irregulating your thyroid like that? Or do you feel like there were other components as well?
Well, I think there's more components. Like the mold is, of course, may I've always been, as a child also, allergic, allergic to certain foods, allergic to perfumes, and very sensitive skin and very sensitive in general
Yeah.
with all these allergy things. And then I think for me, mold was very serious. That was a really big trigger, because that's, I got a lot of, even not just a lot of the hypothyroid symptoms came, but especially skin symptoms actually came to me also from living in that
Wow.
apartment, very allergies on the skin. So I don't know, there's, and then of course, not taking that much care of yourself, not respecting that I was tired, and maybe all the infections, I should have slept more than I did. So I pushed myself to do more than I should have. So that's also a stress factor. And my diet was terrible. I did all the wrong things, Yeah. So I had no fat in my diet. I tried to become lean and was only eating like low fat, high sugar things, because that was what you were told. You could have a lot of sugar and no fat, and possibly no protein too. And so I had a lot of digestive issues too, actually. That was one of my first very serious symptoms, that was like digestive issues.
Just a side thought, I was a model when I was younger, and I was living in Japan, and my roommate was Danish, and she and I remember I we would wake up in the morning and I would want like eggs and coffee and toast, and she would have toast with like Nutella and sprinkles on top, and she would eat sugar for breakfast. She would eat desserts for breakfast. It was fascinating. And I said, "It's so unusual that you do this." And she said, "Everybody does it. Everyone in
Maybe it
Denmark."
was a Scandinavian or European thing that we thought in our country, it was very promoted that you could just eat carbs, a lot of sugar, and not get fat. There was this nutritionist very much in the media at that time, so maybe that was what she was on too.
That's funny.
I don't
Yeah,
know.
maybe. But so you said other components, and I think something that I struggled with as well is even just from childhood being born, sick. I was born sick, and so I had these gut issues and ear, nose, and throat issues from a very early age. And I think some people can be exposed to mold and do better off than someone like yourself and myself. So that's a big trigger, I think, is just there's underlying weaknesses in some of us, right?
But then I think a lot of the problem is that a lot of people, when they, for instance, has been exposed to mold or parasites, or they have been bitten by a tick, like the what's that called, the
Lyme, the
Lyme
Lyme disease,
disease.
yeah.
In my view, and I have a lot of clients like that, they had something has happened. It could be mold, it could be the tick, it could be Lyme, it could be another infection, could be coronavirus. But then what happens is, what I've learned from Dr. Ray Peter, maybe we should talk a little bit about him too,
Yeah,
but
for sure.
that is that it's actually the trigger. But now you're actually out of that trigger, but you're stuck with all your hormonal imbalances, right? So you're stuck with that. The mole triggered my hyperthyroidism. I got, I maybe was a little hyperthyroid from birth, you know, with the allergies and a little bit like, yeah. And then I you got this mold exposure and that triggered it, right? For other people, it might be something else.
And so then you started to study, you went into biochemistry, right? And then when did you realize that the thyroid was really was hypo? When did you realize it was even playing into all of these things that you were dealing with?
Actually, I was so sick when I came back from France. I was so sick that I actually for a couple of years I didn't study. So and that's what in the period where I, you know, went to the doctors in Denmark and luckily is pretty much free everything in the healthcare system, right? So that was lucky because I think I tried all the specialists. And they couldn't figure it out. And actually, what happened was that I actually also used a lot of money on a lot of alternative treatment that really not really helped me. But there was one guy in the whole alternative community, and I had a consultation with him. And he was originally a dentist, and he had written a lot of books on vitamins and things like that. And he took one look at me, and he said, "I think you're low thyroid. I can see, you know, he could just see it." Like the way I presented with this, I think I was tired, slow speech, hair thinning, allergies, constipation, you know, cold. So he's told me, go into this private clinic in Copenhagen and get tested even further for hypothyroidism because I had been tested before. But, you know, then they ran some further testing, and then I was diagnosed. So it was actually just me traveling the whole medical system and the medical system, and actually a guy from the alternative community pointed me to that, and that's why I ended up in that clinic. Then it happened that the clinic in Copenhagen, which should be they were supposed to be like specialists in hyperthyroidism, they also had something with heart disease that were also that was also a specialty of theirs. But the thing ha the what happened was that the guy or the doctor that actually had all the knowledge of how to treat low thyroid function had just retired, and then there was a new doctor, like quite young, and he was very unsure of how to go about it. And you know, I got some medication from United States, and because in Denmark we had another one that wasn't what they really recommended, it was very complex. And I found that I think they mentioned Armour thyroid, and I got some Armour thyroid, which is one of the natural desiccated thyroid medications, but they didn't really know how to use it. So I hopped on the internet, and that's when I found Dr. Ray Pete, like his information. And then at that point, I don't think he was that known. It was around in the beginning of the 2000s. So I just grabbed the phone, and he took it. He
You
picked up.
called him. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, he picked up. So I actually had a conversation with him, and you know, it hadn't only from reading, and I had didn't know that he was like a big star within biochemistry. But then I luckily wrote down his email correctly. And then I started emailing him, and then he really got into explaining all the questions. You know, I had so many questions about why my body reacted like it did. Why did I have my menstruation stop? Why I was also diagnosed with PCO, polycystic ovarian syndrome. And then Ray could explain how the low thyroid function actually created all that those symptoms that I was struggling with. And then further we got into diet and so forth, right? And medication he also helped with.
So do you feel like the thyroid for all women is kind of the pinnacle of the hormonal imbalances that we're dealing with? Or do you think there are other deeper levels or deeper root causes? Or do you think if you can just manage your thyroid, you can get all of those other things to come into balance? Does that make sense?
Yes. Well, I think actually mostly yes. to your question.
Yeah.
The thing is, it's not only women's hormonal balance. Like everyone, actually, as we grow older, we will have a drop in thyroid function and creates a lot of problems. And it's a wrong, according to me, a wrong strategy to try to fix too many of the other problems without at least checking the thyroid function, right? Because if that one is, if thyroid function is off, is so high up in the hierarchy of control systems that you need to fix that first. Maybe then you could say you can work on your estrogen dominance versus progesterone, right? You can work on that balance. But I would say that if you have low thyroid function, you have a lot of the symptoms related. The problem is many of the symptoms overlap, right? What is estrogen dominance and what is low thyroid function? But at least testing pulse and temperature to see where I, if you have a super low pulse rate and you are very cold always and you have a low body temperature too, and then I would look into thyroid function and upping that. You might also work on another hormonal imbalance too, but I think thyroid is so central. So I, if that was what you asked,
Absolutely. Yeah. Because some people will
yeah.
say it's just one thing. But I mean, I'm starting to realize that that's been the most overlooked component of my health throughout my entire
Yeah.
life. And that
Yes.
I've been working, doing, gut health for 17 years almost. And I still couldn't fix my, the infertility and the heavy periods and the migraines, no matter how much gut health that I did. So yeah, so that's exactly what my question was, because I certainly think it's really difficult to get past, like you said, you're working backwards almost, right? You're going uphill if you don't address your thyroid. So why is it, so the standard of care is to take a thyroid panel, right? To take a blood labs and check the numbers. But even the most subtle imbalances, like for example, when I test my pulse and temperature, it's well, now it's starting to become in range. But prior to it, when I started to learn about this, it was either low or it was really high. It depends. Like after I ate, it would get high, and then when I wake up in the morning, it would be low. And those imbalances, or those out of range values, high or low, are quite confusing, because I thought, oh, maybe I'm hypothyroid. I mean, a hyperthyroid. What do you think about hyper? I know Ray Pete has something to say about that, but what do you say about that?
Yeah, and maybe I'm too influenced. Maybe my answer would be the same, but the thing with hyperthyroid, you can be hyperthyroid, like have a really high thyroid function. But the thing is, it's actually usually people that have a high, and if it's too high, it's of course a problem, but just a tiny bit high thyroid function where you say, oh, why are you so warm and we are freezing in here and you're just eating and eating and eating. That's basically the situation a teenager has, right?
Yeah, that
That's
was me.
they're just reading and they're like have a lot of energy and they can run like more than other people. They a baby and teenagers, they naturally have really high metabolic rates, and that's actually when people are doing best. They're feeling better than if you have lower metabolic rate, right? So it's better to be slightly high than slightly low. But what was your question? If it
Was Yeah, so I think Ray Pete would say, or was has said, that it's most likely that you're actually chronically hypo, that the reason those elevated numbers are because you maybe you're running on adrenaline and cortisol,
Exactly,
and
and
so
that
it's
it's a yeah, what's the problem is that people go to the doctor and then they describe their symptoms. Their symptoms are, I can't sleep at night. I have anxiety, I'm jittery, I'm sweating all the time, or even I might lose weight, right? And then it comes back with like maybe just normal thyroid, a normal thyroid panel. According to the doctors, maybe the TSH is just within range and a little bit high, maybe, but in and they will still be diagnosed with hypothyroid, like high thyroid function, because of those anxiety symptoms or over it's basically an over excitation of the cells. Because in low thyroid function, you can't relax. So you're running, like your cells are just up there. And sometimes people that are on estrogen supplements of any kind, birth control pills or hormone replacement therapy, they will actually have some of the same symptoms, because estrogen dominance actually also creates this over excitation of the cells, where you feel energized, but in reality it's not real energy. You're more stressed, and it's a stressed energy, right?
Yeah. I
So
mean, I think that it's more common than we probably realize in young children and young adults.
maybe,
Yeah, because that was certainly my issue. And even though I had cold hands and feet, I had lots of energy. You know, I would have clammy, cold hands and feet, but I had lots of energy. I was eating like crazy. I couldn't gain weight, hyperactivity. I wonder sometimes what the, you know, if we were to take the pulse and temperature of a lot of these ADHD children and children in the spectrum, I wonder, you know, how many of them are actually have subtle hypo.
Because some of the symptoms of low thyroid function are actually this is brain fog, right? Where you can't concentrate, you can't sleep, your sleep is just off. Like you can't fall asleep, you can't stay asleep, you start running on those stress hormones, and that maybe could lead to ADHD, at least ADHD symptoms, because what is that really? What is ADHD?
Exactly. It's an
I don't know.
umbrella. It's an umbrella of so many things.
And there's too many, even in, I think you're ahead of us regarding all that, but we are like, I've also been teaching chemistry in high school, so I know how many of the young people are actually now, they all have a diagnosis, which I think that's a little excessive.
Right.
Like, are you right?
Right. When we were kids, it was just misbehaved hyper children, right? You're hyperactive. Yeah. Oh, that's amazing.
So I
So,
don't know, maybe something is happening, you know, with the foods, and you know, we are getting more low thyroid function. That could be, and that is creating some of those hyper weird
yeah, it's
psychological
keeping
issues.
us
It
in
could
that
be.
fight or flight, you know, sympathetic, where we're always worried and always afraid, and you know, certainly the stress levels that we're under. So when you find out officially, and then you had the armor, you got a hold of some armor and Ray Peet's information, how did you ultimately fix your hypothyroid or bring it into balance?
Well, first of all, I got thyroid medication, right? So I was not on that was a big like a big step in my recovery, was the right kind of thyroid medication. And luckily, I was started up on Amor thyroid, and the important thing is that it contains both T4 and T3, both of the thyroid hormones that we are naturally producing.
And why is that
But
important? Because a lot of times they'll, you know, like the levothyroxine is only the T3, right?
T4.
T4. So what,
So that's a
and
storage hormone, right?
right? And so why is that important to people who have no idea?
No, most people that are treated for low thyroid function, even if they're lucky to get the diagnosis, they get the medication, and the medication is levothyroxine. What you it's T4, you said the
Yeah.
English name for it,
Yeah.
right? But it's medications like Synthroid, I think
Yeah.
it's called in the United States.
Yeah.
There are also other brands, but basically it's just T4.
Okay.
And T4 is the storage hormone. It doesn't have any thyroid effect. It won't do anything to your cells. It needs to be converted into the active thyroid hormone T3. If you can't convert it, you will be undertreated. And
Okay.
in worst case, you will start to even get poisoned from just keep if you keep putting in T4 to the system and you are not converting it to the active thyroid hormone T3, you actually some doctors describe that how T4 goes in and sits on the receptors of T3 and pushes out the small amount of T3 you might be producing, right? And then it blocks the T3, so it actually blocks active thyroid hormone. And then you can even go into a coma because that's what happens when you don't have enough T3 in your cells. So just some people do great on T4.
That's what I was going to say. So something, so that conversion happens in the liver, right? So if someone is taking Synthroid or Levo, they're taking that and then they do better. They're like, I love it. And it's probably because they're able to convert that. And then some women take it and they do great at first. And then 3 years even down the line, they're like, it's not working. I don't feel good. I feel horrible. They increased it and I still don't feel good. So you're saying that if that happens, it's probably because these receptor sites are almost burdened now and the liver's not converting it. Is that right?
Maybe. Or you're getting older and you have some other liver issues, right? You have some, especially women. The high estrogen, if you know, the older we get, we can be almost poisoned by our own estrogen, right? So we have this estrogen excess, and that weakens the liver. So actually, often it's women that have this conversion difficulty. Young men that are healthy and only have a thyroid issue and are treated with a liver, it's levotroxine. I can't say it, but T4.
That works. I say
T4,
Levo. Yeah,
yeah,
T4.
Levo, the storage hormone. When they're treated, they do fine because they have strong livers. But any person that is a bit sick, so even men, if they've been sick for a long time, they're
Or they're
not as strong as
drinkers, or they're,
25-year-old,
yeah.
just normal strong men. Then you will ha you'll s then you see the issues with the T4 medication, and doctors won't. I don't know why exactly, because they. Previously, they were treating with a combination drug of T4 and T3, right? The natural desiccated thyroid, like arm or thyroid, that it was what the doctors prescribed. Then the medical companies synthesized the artificial hormones, and there's nothing wrong with using. Actually, sometimes it's better to use the artificial hormones because they are more reliable, maybe than. Armor has somehow lost the company that makes it and the other natural desiccated thyroid product. They are not you can't count on them as much maybe as you can't the synthetic hormones. But the problem is that people compare the T4 to Armor, and that's not to be compared because one is a T43 medication and the other one is a T4 medication. So
Interesting.
you can treat with T4 and T3 artificial hormones, right? And that's a way really good option, and that's in most cases the best option. You just need to know what you're doing, and doctors don't like to treat with T3 because it's more difficult. You can't just say to a patient, go home with that one dosage of T4 and take it in the morning. You have to actually divide your doses of T3 out into small pieces, and that, first of all, people have difficulty. They need to know exactly what they're doing. Otherwise, they will just do something wrong with a pure T3 medication.
Yeah, or they'll give up because it's a lot of work, right? Sometimes, I mean, it's
It's a lot
hard
of
enough.
work, and if you t do it wrong, basically, you can get a lot of negative symptoms, right? And that's what I'm experiencing with my clients. They don't know, ex no doctor has really, they maybe prescribe T3, but they don't know how to take it. They might take the whole day's dose in one go in the morning on an empty stomach, which is the worst thing you can do
Okay, that was one of
because
my questions.
so much T3. In one go on an empty stomach, it will hit the blood immediately, and the body, because it's such an active hormone, can't handle that. It can't use it for anything, so it just inactivates it.
Oh, wow.
And then you basically won't get any treatment, right?
Yeah.
And that's why using a T3 medication, you really need to say, okay, I take a little piece and have this dosage today. And I'd take a little piece in the morning with my breakfast, a little piece at lunch, a little piece at my afternoon snack, a little piece at dinner, and a little piece before bedtime. Right? If that's how you are taking, that's how it's supposed to be taken. But that's usually not what people do.
Yeah, and why is it so common for doctors to say eat on an empty stomach or take it with an empty, take it right when you wake up? Why? I mean,
Yeah.
this sounds like
I mean,
completely
it's,
contradicting.
yeah. I think it's because they want maximum absorption, fast maximum absorption. But that's not, I mean, it can be fine if you are on a T4 medication. You can do that. I would actually, I always, Ray Pete has always told me take your medication with thyroid medication with food. But for a T4 medication, it really doesn't matter. It's just a storage hormone, so it ha doesn't have any activity. But what you do when you have any kind of T3 in your product, like if it's an artificial hormone T3 or it's a natural T3 from a desiccated thyroid, it's actually best to take it with food because then you will have that small piece of T3 and then it will be digested together with the food, so it will release more slowly into the bloodstream, and your body will recognize there's a little bit of T3 coming now, and I'm good with that, right? This is very physiologically correct, in so I'm not inactivating anything, I'm just getting a steady small amount out into the blood of T3, and that's how it's supposed to be.
Okay, I see.
So that's why it's best with food, which if you're using T3.
Hey everyone, I wanted to introduce Ona's new ultra concentrated CBD progesterone cream. It's 5% CBD and 3% progesterone for relief of stress, anxiety, minor aches and pains in your muscles and joints. It is US sourced, produced, and naturally derived. It's organically grown. And right now, we are doing a special because this particular strength of CBD on the market, which is THC free, normally goes for about $120 for 2 ounces. So we are doing $60 as an introductory offer. And the reason I developed it was because this particular combination with the CBD helps to downregulate cortisol while it helps you to take advantage of the progesterone benefits. The link is in the show notes, or you can go to us.onasnatural.com. You know, with bioidentical hormones, they are most similar to the hormones that we make ourselves. And that's important as opposed to, like, say, Premarin, which is the estrogen from horse, pregnant mare urine, right? So how is it that the porcine or the pig desiccated thyroid or beef desiccated thyroid, how is that? Does it matter that it's not bioidentical? And can there be a bioidentical thyroid product without it being from an animal?
Actually, I think, to my knowledge, both all synthetic and especially the synthetic hormones are bioidentical. You have just taken the thyroid hormone and you just copied the structure, right? In like synthesized it in a lab. So it is a bio. There's and that's also why if you do thyroid therapy correctly, like you're treating with a thyroid medication, there shouldn't be any negative effects from it. Like there shouldn't be any list of side effects because you're just replacing what you're lacking, basically,
Because there
right?
are, there can
So
be so many side effects from, like,
yeah,
taking bioidentical estrogen or progesterone, right? Or even pregnenolone or DHEA.
but bioidentical, basically, that term means that you have taken that it's exactly the same structure as the human body would make it, right? That when you do a natural desiccated thyroid, that's also, I mean, the pig is produce the same hormones as we do. When you take the natural desiccated thyroid, it's dried thyroid gland from a pig or a cow, right? So it's an animal thyroid gland that they just dry and yeah, and then so it should be pretty, and I think that hormone is also exactly the same as the one we produce. So I'm not. I don't think that there is any. The problem is if you Yeah, so I'm not really sure about your question about side effects and bioidentical hormones. The problem is if you are treating with the wrong hormones, even
Right.
if they're bioidentical, you will get some negative effects, right?
Right. So incorrect.
Yeah.
Incorrect. Yeah. So I guess a long time ago, my mentor used to say, when he was alive, he used to say, it's so much better to use plant-based melatonin because
Okay.
it's more similar to the melatonin that we make ourselves, because he was very much against using a bovine melatonin because he said it isn't
Okay.
cell resonant. And that always stuck with me. I don't know what the
Okay.
science is behind that, but it
Yeah.
always stuck with me and made me think, I wonder if that's why it's better to use bioidentical hormones versus synthetic.
Yeah.
But now, with the thyroid, that's why my question was just, I was just curious if
Yeah,
it
but
was beneficial.
all thyroid hormones, to my knowledge, are bioidentical. They're simply taking the same molecule structure, like, and then just copied it. So it's
Gotcha.
bioidentical.
Okay,
But there
gotcha.
are problems with the problem with bioidentical, just because you know the term bioidentical, just when people think, for instance, for menopause treatment, when people say, okay, I'm using bioidentical hormones, so this should be good for me. So they can just use any of the hormones that we are naturally, like humans are naturally making, and then it's safe and it's good because they are bioidentical. That's not completely true, right? Because you can mess up those hormones and make an imbalance of natural hormones too.
Gotcha. Okay.
But you are right. There are, when you talk about not bioidentical hormones, for instance, artificial, not artificial, progesterone. Because when you go to the doctor,
Progestin.
the progestins, they are not the same molecules as natural progesterone. And because they are not the same molecule, they will also have a negative, you know, then you have side effects from it, right? Because it's not natural. So there's both side of the story. You can use natural, really bioidentical hormones
I
wrongly, and you will get
see.
some problems.
Okay, so I see. So basically, let me see if I got this clear. I think it just came clear to me, which is the
Yeah.
molecular structure when we say bioidentical. It doesn't matter
Yes.
if it's from a cow, a pig, an alien. If it's a bioid, it's molecularly the
It's
same
the
than ours.
structure is exactly the same, right?
Okay, but if it's
So,
synthetic, but it
yeah.
can be synthetic and still be bioidentical. But if you
Right.
have something, a hormone that is molecularly different than the one we produce, that, okay, I understand now, like progestogens.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, and then how, if you are hypothyroid or if you just
Yeah.
have a thyroid imbalances, can you treat or bring balance without using thyroid medications?
To a certain degree, yes. I mean, a lot of people are every day doing things that are naturally inhibiting their thyroid function. And the most important things are the fats that we have started to change the fat of our diet in the old days. And when I say old days, I mean back in the 60s, before all the smart food came in the supermarkets, when the women were still cooking at home, really from
Yeah.
basics. And when we used also in restaurants and burger bars and whatever, even the United States food, when you went for a burger or something, it was made with butter, right? It was fried and maybe they had made the fries in
Lard.
coconut oil actually, or in some kind of animal fat,
Yeah,
right?
they would use
Like
this lard or
lard or something.
tallow.
Yeah, exactly. So that was the old way of doing it. And that's actually saturated fat. And that doesn't harm the thyroid function.
It does not.
Saturated fats are okay for thyroid function. But it's the unsaturated fat that we started using, like in the 70s, became, oh God, now we're not eating butter, we're not eating coconut oil, we are not doing the lard thing because it was connected to the heart disease. So they made this connection, and actually it's not never been biochemically proven that there's any connection between saturated fats and high cholesterol, and high cholesterol is apparently that has not even been proven to be connected to heart disease. So the whole story, but that story came into the media, into the nutritional world, and then we shifted to use sunflower seed oil, cotton seed oil, flax seed oil, all these oils that we had never been eating before. And that's one of the big shifts in the Western diet. And that's one of the things, if you stay away from all those liquid, basically liquid cooking oils, then you can help your thyroid function immensely.
Wow. And I thought when I started to hear this from Ray Pete, I thought, I don't eat that much PUFAs. I don't, which we're called, we're talking about polyunsaturated fat, the PUFAs. I thought, I don't eat that much. And then I read one of the studies that Ray Pete had uncovered that was even just one meal with, say, I don't remember the food he described, but it was just like, let's just say a potato chip or, a salad dressing that has some canola oil in it, which every single restaurant uses because it's the cheapest, right? Just one meal, how much it can change and inflame, create like inflammatory responses in the body, which probably begin at the thyroid, I would imagine, and the gut. And I was so shocked because I thought, compared to how I used to eat, I'm really good at not eating PUFAs. But then I read his studies and I was like, oh, I think I still eat enough to make a difference. It's hard to avoid them though, isn't it?
It's super hard to avoid. You have to make all your food yourself, basically, right? Or just stay to milk. You know, if you're out, just eat very simply. Because any prepared food, even if it's prepared by some of your friends, will possibly include PUFA, right? Because that's what they use for cooking and the dressings, as you say. But yeah, so it is a little bit hard, and you need, of course, the most important thing is what you do every day. Day in and day out, right? And if you're mostly cooking at home, I think you're pretty safe. I allow myself when I go out to friends, or tomorrow we have a big Christmas party at the work. So I'm allowing myself to just eat what's there. But luckily, our Christmas lunch, which is a old Danish tradition, is you it's based on all the old food, right? So it's like it's maybe it's not so high in PUFA as other stuff might be, but it is a problem going out, right? It is a problem because if and just you can't eat in my country, I can't find any potato chips without it being fried in a sunflower seed oil.
I
That's
just
it.
actually
So I
decided.
So you can't eat stuff like that.
I just decided to I have a dehydrator and I was craving salt and vinegar potato chips. So I'm going to try my hand at making my own salt and vinegar potato chips and see how that goes because I just grew up loving that. I loved chips and fries and, so it's a bummer. But okay, so you're saying we can potentially treat our own thyroid or bring balance to our own imbalances if it is probably if it isn't too severe, right? And if you're doing all the other work, like working on the gut and all of that, and then avoiding PUFAs, what else can we do to help balance our thyroid?
Today, actually, I've just been writing a small guide for my clients out there about light therapy, right? Because light is very important for our hormonal balance. It's one of the, like, if you say thyroid hormone is important, and progesterone is important, and good diet is important, then light would be on that same list, right? You can become really, really sick if you live in darkness. Like, in darkness, I mean not going out in the daylight, basically. And in my country, we are now in, the winter season, meaning it gets dark around 4 or 5 in the afternoon, and then it's dark until 8 o'clock next morning. So and then you are at work, right? When the sun is out. So basically you can be months without getting any sun exposure. And that's unhealthy, right? So that's a factor. If you say diet affects thyroid function, light affects thyroid function, right? So
And
getting
so
the
does
right
it,
type of light.
okay, and that does that mean only going out into the sun, or can that also mean any kind of like treatment, like
Yeah,
infrared treatment or any red light treatment?
exactly.
Okay.
So in my country, there simply isn't enough light, right? Even if I took a walk, maybe if I really did it in a sunny day, but a lot of days are even cloudy, right? So it would be dark, and when the sun is out, it's cloudy. So that's not enough anyways. But sunlight is really good. Like for people that are living in sunny places, go out, be out like during the day, maybe not don't get a sunburn, and don't use too many sun lotions because they contain so many weird chemistry. But just go out, enjoy the sun, and avoid burning. So in the afternoon, enjoy the sun. That's really healthy. For other people that are not able to either go out or they live in my in Denmark or something similar, light therapy, yeah, they. And then you can use incandescent. That's what I'm writing a guide on. You can use incandescent bulbs, and they also warm your room up. Or you can use LEDs, right? And then they have to be in those wavelengths that are in the orange red wavelength. And actually, infrared is too high. Yeah, this you see, we go wavelengths is a yeah, it's a difficult concept maybe, but infrared have too high wavelengths to actually do much to the body. You need to be around 600 to 700 nanometers in order to have it be effective. And that's the orange red light. Infrared is mostly just heat. So all those, I know your people and some clients sometimes talk about infrared saunas, and they have invested in these big things. And you, yeah.
Some of them
But
have red
actually,
lights in them.
yeah.
Like a
What?
I have we have a we have an infrared sauna, and
Yeah.
it has red separate from
Yeah.
the heat lamps, it has
Yeah.
a light that you
Yeah.
can change the color on.
Yeah,
So
right. So you can so I think it's mostly the light you will benefit from. I think warming up your body in the wintertime, like getting warm, that's also what thyroid hormone does, right? It rises your basal body temperature. So actually the warming up is also healthy, but from a light perspective, it needs to be the light and not so much heat. Yeah.
Okay. And then okay, let's talk a little bit more about the progesterone and oh wait, well I don't know that we completely finished the concept of can you balance your own hormones, so your own thyroid. So light, avoiding PUFA, diet. So when we talk about, I know Ray Pete is not a fan of the term Ray Pete diet. I know he doesn't
No.
care for that, but there is a bit of a repeat diet, isn't there? There is a bit of a lifestyle that he recommends. And so that's going to help with thyroid. And what does mostly that entail? The big ones. You don't have to go into all of them.
That's the PUFA out and in with the saturated fats, right? That's one of the big things. He does eat quite a bit of sugar, and that's not to say that you should just keep on, white sugar. That you can do a bit of white sugar, but mostly it's fruit, right? And he's very fond of things like tropical fruits, and the citrus family of fruits, so especially oranges. But all those citrus fruits, basically. Even I know people are afraid of what's that called in English? Is it grapefruit?
Grapefruit, the reddish
Yeah, the
round,
big one. Yeah, because it has been connected to some hormonal issues, right? A lot of like pregnant women are told not to eat grapefruit, or but I think that's if it's ripe grapefruit, then it's okay. So all the citrus fruits, basically, especially orange juice, and then you get a lot of sugar from that, right? And you also get a lot of minerals from the fruits.
And vitamin C.
So, yeah.
He sees sugar purely as fuel. And when people hear the word sugar and they say, "Oh my goodness, his diet has sugar in it. That's feeds cancer. That makes you fat. That gives you acne." They're usually talking about processed foods with sugar in them, packaged foods with
Yeah.
sugar in them. But
Yeah.
his healthy carbohydrates are, like you said, citrus fruits. I think he likes dried fruit as well, right? Like dried fruits,
Yeah,
like dried apricots
yeah.
and then orange juice for those who can handle orange juice. And then but he doesn't really, he's not a fan of just regular orange juice, right? He prefers that you juice it yourself or that you have some kind of fresh squeezed high quality juice.
Yeah, again, I'm not so strict. And if you listen a lot to Ray Pete, you will hear that even he himself has for a long time used concentrate, like
Okay.
orange juice concentrate, right? Because if you, it's about choosing. If you are limited in some areas in the United States, I've heard are quite limited. You go to a
Yeah.
shop and you can't get like fresh this and fresh that, and
Right.
it depends a little bit where you are, right? But let's say you are limited, or you're on a trip, and so actually just going into a small supermarket and finding orange juice concentrate can be okay. It's
As
better than
long as it's
nothing.
just orange juice in the ingredients, right? You don't want to have
Right.
anything.
Yeah. Just orange juice or concentrate is fine. Like, but I know, especially in your country, they start adding weird stuff to it, like
Sure.
other taste enhancers or
And
sugar.
high
Or...
fructose corn syrup and
Yeah, yeah,
colors, they
yeah,
add
yeah,
colors,
yeah.
sure.
Yeah,
Natural
colorants and
flavors. Yeah.
yeah. So as long as it's a pure orange juice, even if it's from concentrate, right? Again, it's actually about including orange juice in your regime or your diet, and then not thinking it needs to be the perfect one. I need to squeeze them myself, because then you will
Right.
never reach.
You'll never reach it,
That's
right?
like so. And we are busy, right? We're busy, so we can't be perfect all the time. Of course, if like it would be best if you had the orange tree in your garden,
Right.
right? That's right.
Yeah.
But yeah. So just things like that. And I mean, so fruit and low starchy fruit is basically his big thing. So something like melons, all kinds of melons. Orange juice without pulp, that's maybe more important than it's freshly squeezed. That it's actually just because they add in the pulp afterwards. And some there has been some I think he talks about that it's actually not just pulp, it's actually also plastic pieces that are in that
Oh.
artificial pulp that they add back in to the juices. So actually
Wow.
pulp free juice are better. So
Okay.
any fruit juice, actually, right? It can also be something like grape juice,
Okay.
right? It's
Yeah.
super sweet, but it's very anti-inflammatory. There's a lot of fruits that are low starch that you can use.
And
And then
why
he's big on, yeah,
he's big on what?
milk.
Milk, of course, dairy.
Right. Yeah. So that's
And I know he's not really
why.
particular in that way either. I mean, he does say lower percentages of fat, like 2%, or not on the whole fat, because that's very high calories, which I learned very quickly when I switched back on to dairy. I was like,
Yeah.
oh, that's a lot of fat and
No,
a lot of calories.
again, especially from the United States, when I have clients, I do a video counseling with people from all over the world, especially from United States. And what they always tell me, oh, I have a local farmer, and I pick up fresh milk that are unpasteurized and high quality product.
It's
First of all, Deborah,
$20
it's
a gallon.
it's also
Yeah.
expensive. First of all, it's very high fat usually, right? So it'll be cream on top, and then you have really a high fat product. Second, some people get super sick if it's unpasteurized, because all the bacteria that can be in milk, right, when it's unpasteurized. So again, just going to your normal supermarket, picking up more commercial milk. I know that in the United States you add in vitamin A and D to some of your milks, and maybe that's not the best thing, but if you're not allergic to the way that people can be allergic to the way they have added those in, yeah.
Yeah.
But but just and more commercial milk, and it doesn't have to be organic, you know. Milk is to begin with a really safe product, and even if it's non-organic, it's also a quite clean product.
Really? So
So
even
it's
though the
about,
cows are
yeah.
eating, let's say they're grain fed and the grain is sprayed with pesticides, doesn't that show up in the breast milk? Because it certainly shows up in the breast milk of women when they eat pesticided foods.
Not saying that it's like maybe it is the best if it is organic, right? But
Yeah.
because cows are have a different whole digestive system than
It's
we do.
ultra
So they
processed.
actually, yeah, they have like these several stomachs that things go through, right? So it becomes really clean product. Again, if you are out traveling and you maybe you're when you're home, you have your organic milk. But when you're out traveling, go even buy one of these, and especially in like I'm from Europe, so south of Europe, they will have like ultra, you know, UT, UT,
Oh,
is it
ultra
UTH?
pasteurized?
Yeah,
Okay.
high, you know, when they have heated it up and it's not in the refrigerator, it's actually just on the shelves because it's
Oh,
like
like
they
evaporated
have
milk or
like,
something?
it's not a
No.
powder, but it's still, you know, it's just so treated so, with so much heat
Yeah.
for so long time. So it's also pasteurized. And that just means that maybe the nutritional value is a bit lower, but it's still a good product,
Yeah,
you know?
yeah. It's
So
so
you can,
fascinating because for so
so you
long,
can.
I've always kind of steer, especially women with hormone problems. And then I started to learn that, how wrong I was about that. And it was just kind of like going around in the nutritional world that dairy was just not good for you. It's
Oh
mucus forming, inflammatory. And but I think the what you just said was key, which is go and try the different milk. So if you think that you have a milk sensitivity, unless you're somebody who has a severe allergy to one of the components of milk, it's worth experimenting with different types of milk. Like I found out that I cannot do ultra pasteurized. I do better if it's just regular pasteurized or homogenized, but not, and then raw milk I do well with, but it's so high in fat. So yeah, I think people can just try to experiment and see what works best. Just get like a small amount of the milk and see, because I think it's something we've been told not to do anymore, and it's a shame, isn't it? Because such a superfood, right?
It's a super food, and it's a whole meal also, right? We're busy. Like if I'm super busy and I have a high thyroid function, right? I'm on thyroid medication, I need food.
Yeah.
And I have, let's say I have a really busy day. If you drink like a lot, like a big glass of cold, ice cold milk, right? Then that's a whole meal. You
Yeah.
don't, you can just run a couple of hours more.
It's hydrating as well, isn't it? More than water.
And it's full of calcium and protein and good fats, and milk also contains a tiny bit of progesterone actually. So it is so it's like
Nice.
it supports your hormonal balance in a lot of ways. And I can tell you I'm lactose intolerant.
What?
I don't know how that happened, but I actually, and I'm not completely lactose intolerant, but if I drink too much milk that is not lactose free, I get a bit of diarrhea. So I
Oh,
have
wow.
to actually, and I've asked Ray again, you know, we have in my country, we have just lactose free milk is non-organic. It's from our biggest milk producer in Denmark. So it's and it tastes really good. So I'm doing lactose free most of the time. Like, right, so and according to Rapid, you should be able to build work yourself out of that lactose intolerance. I have not found that completely to be true for me. So what I do is that I eat, you know, I eat a lot of milk products, so I can eat ice cream with a bit of, you know, there's lactose. I can eat a lot of cheeses. I don't have a problem with cheeses. I can do a little bit of milk, especially if it's heated up. Then I'm not th somehow something happens to the lactose. It's just anything that's heated doesn't produce the same symptoms.
Interesting.
So I actually when but when I do like drink, because I do drink a large amount of milk, I also, I do lactose free. And you can do that, because what they've done, they just added the enzyme that you're lacking a little bit. So you just have pre-digested it for yourself.
I see.
That's it.
Okay, gotcha. So can you talk, since what you brought up progesterone, can you talk a little bit about the importance of wait, I have a question here. Let's see. Progesterone. The importance of vitamin A for hormones. That's not something a lot of people think about. Like when you think about hormones, I think the first nutrient most people think about is magnesium. And can you tell us why vitamin A is so important for hormones?
Yes, vitamin A is important because it's very central up. Again, it's about finding where it's where do we produce hormones from, basically, right? We produce hormones from cholesterol, because all steroid hormones, thyroid hormone, is not produced from cholesterol, but all the steroid hormones, meaning the first one is pregnenolone, so cholesterol is turned into pregnenolone. And then from pregnenolone, we produce progesterone, DHEA, and then it comes further down. Then we come to testosterone, estrogen, and all the other hormones, also the cortisol and so forth. But so we need to turn cholesterol into pregnenolone to produce, for instance, progesterone. And vitamin A is needed in that conversion. So we can't convert from cholesterol to pregnenolone if we don't have enough thyroid hormone, vitamin A, and light, actually. So that's also why it's central to our hormonal production, basically, right? Then I think also like a vitamin A in has a lot of anti-estrogenic it's very anti-estrogenic in a lot of processes. So that's also why it can work on, it's, and for the skin, it's also important, right? It's often an anti-aging thing, something about cell turnover and cell renewal. So it has a lot of effects. But when you say hormones and how does it affect, it's actually, it's needed for that conversion,
Directly.
right?
So
So we can
what,
produce all our hormones.
yeah. So then, vitamin A, you can get it from a lot of vegetables, but that's then the body has to convert that from the vitamin A that is in the vegetables to the usable retinol, right? Vitamin A retinol. And that's that conversion, at least this is what I just recently learned, that conversion for someone who has gut issues may not happen. So I was having some anemia and serious hormonal issues a while back, and I was just feverishly eating carrots for summer. I was addicted. I could not stop eating them. And my friend, you might know about Morley Robbins, he said to me, he said, your body was trying to convert that vitamin A into retinol to use to, upset, to get more progesterone or whatever. And but I couldn't convert that. What do you think about that? And is that vitamin A retinol? Can you take it as a supplement, vitamin A? Because I don't ever recommend that because I don't really know much about those types of vitamin A.
That's a good question. I mean, I know people, I think if I remember correctly, now you catch me on my vitamin A biology, but
That was
if I
actually a
remember
question sent
correctly,
to me.
great. If you, I, as I remember, it's vitamin B12 that is needed in the conversion.
Of the vitamin A to the retinol.
For the vitamin A, and so you need to be high in that too. But the problem is, if you eat a lot of carotene and think that that's going to be converted into vitamin A, the problem with carotene itself, if you just overload yourself on carotene, I do recommend a vitamin A supplement sometimes to people, but it's, I never recommend it in the form of carotene. And that's because carotene, and that's a little bit complex to understand, but if you look at the chemical structure of carotene, is actually similar to PUFA.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
It's actually anti-thyroid. That doesn't mean that the small amount of carotene you get in you get it in like carrots, as you say, and other vegetables that have that color, you know, red and orange vegetables. But don't actually, when you have, let's say you're hypothyroid and you eat a lot of carrots and you can almost turn yellow, you're
I
like your
have
palms
done.
can get yellow, right?
Yeah.
Right. That's actually because hypothyroid people have, you know, that it's a typical thing that they build up all this carotene. They can't convert it. So that's also an issue. And that's actually a sign of hypothyroidism. Of course, if you like overload yourself on carotene, anyone can possibly get yellow, right? But
Yeah.
yellow hands, like that's actually one of the what the doctors in the old time looked at. Oh, you're not converting the carotene, you're getting into vitamin A, so you're just building it up like in
Wow.
your palms, and you're getting yellow, right?
Yeah.
So actually, so it can be a sign of hypothyroidism, and I think B12 is also needed in the conversion. Then, because when you get vitamin A from animal source, it's not beta carotene, it's a real like retinal form, and so actually it's more the way you want it, so more from liver and eggs and milk, so the things that are already part of the so-called repeat diet, like liver, egg, milk, you know,
Yeah.
I would rather get it from there. And usually if you just have a diet like that, most people don't need enough more vitamin A. They don't need more than is provided, because that's already quite high in vitamin A, right? These foods. But
Right.
there can be situations where vitamin A supplement, but not, I would not never recommend, I would recommend the real like
Food
vitamin A,
source.
not the precursor to vitamin A.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Incredible. Okay, and then a
Yeah.
couple more questions. So, with the repeat thing, I was very sad to find out that coffee was encouraged because I'm not a very good coffee drinker.
Okay.
But I think it was Kate Deering who encouraged me to try just an ounce with a lot of
Yeah.
milk and a lot of
Yeah.
honey. And that
Yeah.
has really changed my ability to process. But I think it was Keith Littlewood who said, this is a reflection of your liver function if you can't handle
Yeah.
coffee. But I never really
Yeah.
fully understood what that means. What's wrong with my liver if I can't handle
No.
coffee?
Yeah, what is it's I think it comes back to blood sugar. And a lot of people, like I hear it all the time, oh, I can't drink coffee, I can't, I stay up all night, and me myself, I don't drink coffee that late in the day, right? But I can drink coffee all day and sleep perfectly during the night. Or but the worst thing you can do is actually do black coffee on an empty stomach.
Okay.
That way, a lot of people, including myself, sometimes get a little bit shaky, you know, and it's basically the blood sugar that's a little bit off. You know, the same feeling comes from when your low blood sugar starts shaking a little bit. It's too much, and somehow the caffeine in coffee promotes your cellular energy, or you use so much energy, you know, it pushes you forward, you know. So if you don't have anything with it and you're just doing it on an empty stomach, it's like taking a huge amount of T3 on an empty stomach. You become a little bit shaky, you know.
Okay.
Don't do that. It's too much. So the coffee with milk, and you can do honey, but you can also just do sugar, just normal white sugar. You can do, yeah, the way that means you get a little bit of other foods too, right? That stabilizes your blood sugar while you're pushing yourself forward.
Yeah.
So some people need to only have coffee with like larger meals, and then they do okay. So
Yeah.
you have a large meal and then you have like coffee, you're fine. But
Yeah.
don't do it like when you're just and then just taking a small cracker and then that's it. And then you can't do coffee because
Yeah.
it's not enough food. Simply, it's that. So
I
you're pushing
definitely
your metabolism forward.
the milk, and I put colostrum and some collagen, honey, vanilla, cinnamon. It's like a dessert. But if I just put a little too much, yeah, I definitely will get jittery. But I have, so then, I was telling my mom that I was going to start drinking coffee again. And she said, why though? Why? And I said, because the benefits, she drinks coffee every day of her life. And it's because of the benefits are, irrefutable. Like you just, it's, so I want to participate in those benefits. So I really have been
Yeah, I
trying to
mean,
train myself.
yeah, coffee is a must for me in the morning. Otherwise, I'm not getting anything done. That day would be off. I would have to go and buy coffee in order to come to work,
Well,
I
so
think.
doesn't that say that there's some kind of like, not
Addiction,
necessarily,
right?
not just addiction, but your body isn't able to function without this caffeine boost. And is that necessarily good, or is it like, oh, let's stop being so particular and just use it because of all the benefits and stop worrying about whether or not it's an addiction? Because there aren't really any side effects to that, are there? Like negative side
No.
effects to ongoing coffee consumption?
I don't think so. I think the more you drink, the healthier you are, actually. It helps the liver, it helps the brain. It prevents even Alzheimer and things like that. So it's very anti-inflammatory. I think it is a bit of an addiction. I don't think it's a, so like I have never heard people that can't, like it's a drug that they need to go to a clinic to stay away from coffee. I think if you had to, like then you could, right? But it's just
You're right.
it's something to wake
People
up.
aren't
You
throwing
wake
their
up from
lives away.
coffee.
They're not
No,
throwing their
exactly.
lives away because they drink too much coffee, right?
But it's like people being addicted to Coke, right? Coca-Cola or something. I mean, it's the coughing in it. I think it is a bit of an addiction, but the problem is it a, is I think the caffeine, you get a bit addicted to it, but it has so many benefits, right?
It
So
outweighs the, yeah, as long as you have access to it. Okay, and then the last
But even
question.
Coke or Coca-Cola contains caffeine, and even tea, some tea, right?
The
Black tea has a
caffeine.
little bit of caffeine, so it's like, yeah, caffeine in it. So it's not.
Well, I love it. I love it all, especially now that Ray Pete said that the Mexican Coke is okay to drink once in a while. So, okay, what do you think? I'll just wrap it up with this last question, and that's what do you think about vitamin D and supplementing vitamin D?
Actually, again, I just wrote a small guide on that because that's something that a lot of people ask, right? Vitamin D is super important. I mean, it's so important that you can't distinguish its function from thyroid and light and progesterone. So it's in the same category as those things, right? So people that are low in vitamin D are really suffering, right? They get so many symptoms, and a lot of the symptoms are similar to a hormone imbalance or a low thyroid function. So it's extremely important. There's a lot of confusion about around vitamin D because people maybe don't understand the chemistry of it, but we take vitamin D3 as a supplement, right? And then it's converted in the liver to the storage form of vitamin D, 25 hydroxyvitamin D, the storage form. And that form is actually the one that is good, beneficial, has a lot of anti-inflammatory things with it. Then if you are low in D3 or you're low in calcium, if you are like running really low on those two things, your body goes into a kind of an emergency situation, and it actually starts converting the storage form, the good form of vitamin D, into something called activated vitamin D. And it sounds like this is the active good form, but this is the activated vitamin D is actually what's so dangerous to have too much of because it's connected with inflammation. So it's like, and you can't stop the formation of active vitamin D by not eating any D3.
Okay, say that one more
So
time.
we. Yeah, some people try to, yeah, like let's say that activated vitamin D, it is the bad form of vitamin D, right?
Right.
But it comes from vitamin D3 that we like, right? So we
Right.
supplement with vitamin D3, then it's turned into a storage form, which has all these benefits. And then if you're low in the storage form or in vitamin D3 and your calcium, some emergency mechanism comes into place, and then you take the little bit of storage vitamin D that you have, which is good, and then you activate it into another form of vitamin D, which creates inflammation. And when you are in that situation, when you start like emergency turning the little bit of storage form into activated form of vitamin D, then you are in a situation where you have high parathyroid hormone, you have some high inflammatory markers, and it's actually not good. So the best way to avoid that situation is to have enough of the storage form, thus eating a lot of D3 in your diet. If that, but it's a little bit complex vitamin D, because you have these steps of activation, and the last activation step is bad, right?
So you could feasibly be taking of vitamin D. Let's say everyone's talking about D3 and K2. You could be taking D3 and K2, and if your levels aren't going up, you could actually be doing this process at the end there, where you're not, where you're activating it.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I think it's actually when you have a diet low in D3 and calcium, your body comes into an emergency situation where your parathyroid hormone rises. So we have four glands around in the para up here in the neck, and they measure calcium metabolism. So when they sense that they have low calcium intake and low D3 intake, that hormone will be secreted in higher amounts. So you have high parathyroid hormone, PTH. And that high parathyroid hormone is an inflammatory marker. You don't want to have high parathyroid hormone on a blood test. It goes in and it actually takes the small amount of storage vitamin D that you have and activate it in an attempt to correct things. And then we have the activated vitamin D in itself is also inflammation promoting. The parathyroid hormone in itself is inflammation promoting. So you need to lock that system down by eating enough D3 and calcium.
And that is the dairy, eggs. What
Yeah.
else would you, what else comes to mind?
Yeah. I would supplement with vitamin D, right?
And do you recommend
Especially in
it with
my
the
country.
K2?
Yes, I mean K2 is good. It's a very expensive vitamin. But it pulls, let's say it pulls in the same direction. So it like let's say we want the calcium not to be pulled from the bones to the blood. We want the calcium in the bones, strong bones, and low calcium level in the blood. And K helps with that, and it helps keeping the parathyroid hormone down. So it just helps not activating the vitamin D. So K2 helps with that. That's true. So, yeah.
I mean, it sounds like a lot. You keep talking about the conversion of things and the conjugation of things, and it really seems like thyroid is so important. All of these different glands and hormones are so important, but it sounds like the liver is just like the king here. Like we really need so much
And you know
support.
what? Yeah, the liver needs a lot of support. The most important vitamins for the liver are all the B vitamins. Like a B complex every day can be good for people that are, you can eat liver and get a lot of vitamin B there, or liver pate or anything like that. But if you're not a big liver fan and you want to do something good for your liver, it needs a lot of B vitamins to run. And the funny thing is, it loops back. A low thyroid function again makes the liver underperform. And then you can't activate your thyroid hormone. Can you see how? And then you're just stuck.
Yeah.
And you can't detoxify estrogen when your liver is low, and estrogen just builds up and further lowers the thyroid function, then the liver function gets even further down. And that's how people get sick, really, right?
What a
So
mess.
now, yes, it's a mess. But
It
you're right, liver function is very central.
Yeah. I mean, you just described so many of my members in my estrogen dominance support group on Facebook who are so frustrated because it feels like they're stuck in this loop. And I was certainly stuck in that loop. And but I guess you just have to keep on persisting with all of the things, trying to bring balance to the thyroid, et cetera.
And you can bring, like, let's say you have been spiraling down into like low thyroid function, estrogen dominance, ineffective liver, poor digestion, right? Everything goes together. It's like that. Low body temperature, can't sleep during the night, you know, all these things. Then sometimes you can just do one of the things, like increasing the thyroid function, and that will pull your whole system up if you have a good diet. Sometimes you just need to do more things at the same time. I think you asked previously, can you improve hormonal balance with thyroid? What is most important, progesterone or thyroid? But it also depends on how sick you are, right? Because the sicker we are, the more systems we have to work on at the same time in order to pull your body from that spiraling down. So some people might need both liver support in the form of good vitamins. They need progesterone supplementation. They need thyroid supplementation. They need to do the light thing. They need to, you know, they need to do everything correctly in order to get out of that downward spiral.
Now you see telemed, you see clients through telemed calls.
I like we do here. I don't use Zoom, but I use Google Meet, which is just the same, right? I send a link to my clients, so clients come in, and I have clients from all over the world, actually. A lot of clients from the
Great.
United States, Australia.
Well, I'm excited because I think one of the missing components in our group, the missing things that we have so much help, there are so many resources, but when it comes to thyroid, women feel very stuck with how to go move forward. And so I'll be excited to share your info with them. Do you have anything you want to share with us that I maybe didn't cover or that you want to talk about?
Well, I could talk a little bit about my homepage, but what I actually do is, I must say I'm very inspired by Ray Peet, right? Dr. Ray Peet, and he, because I felt when I studied biochemistry, I was sick with hyperthyroidism, and I just got so well enough to start my biochemistry studies, and then so I actually followed Dr. Peet's research while studying biochemistry, right? And it just made a lot of sense, you know. So it was a good combination. But what I do today, because Ray Peet's research, let's face it, can be quite difficult to understand, and it's very he's he I think his mind works differently than our. He just has so many thoughts and so much biochemistry, and it just comes out in one go. No headlines and anything he writes. It's just a stream of
Stream
thoughts,
of
basically.
consciousness, yeah.
Yes. So, and I'm like, even me sometimes, I'm sitting there with his articles. But I feel that he is the only one that, you know, system, he has made like a pattern of the body in such a way in his mind that he can somehow always explain things. Things are connected now. It's not the liver does this, the thyroid does this, the heart does this, the digestion, you know, everything is connected. So you can talk about holistic things, right? But it sounds so alternative to say holistic, but it is really holistic, his view on it. So what I do, because it's his research is so difficult sometimes, I actually systemize, put it into, you know, guides, and everything is online, right? So I have like e-books, e-guides, e-diet plans, you know, things like that, so
Great.
people can just sit and read that. And then I do online counseling.
Okay, so you're basically taking Ray Peet's information and you're combing through it for the layman so that I can look at it and say, oh, okay, I
And
get
then
this. That's great.
Yeah, and then I try in my material to explain some biochemistry, right? But in a way so that you just know why you're doing this, right? And then I often come with a product recommendation, right? I have like a light therapy lamp, or I have a, you know, then there's a link to that. And since I have, when I have all these clients from around the world, there's some often a European link and a US link. So everybody has, you know, the possibility to buy some of these things. I don't sell any physical products myself, so I don't, I just recommend things.
Okay,
You know, I
great.
recommend. So yeah.
Good.
That's
Well,
what I do.
lovely. I think it's right up our alley in my group. We have 22,000 plus members, and they're always crying out for help, especially with thyroid stuff. So it would be great to introduce them to your stuff.
And again, I should maybe just mention, I don't prescribe medication, but I do help people, you know, understand what it is, if their medication, maybe they take it wrongly, or maybe
Great.
they should ask for another type of medication. So I know a lot about medication.
Oh, good.
And in some countries, you can also buy over-the-counter thyroid products that do work, but just, you know, don't require a prescription. So it's a
Yeah.
little bit, yeah.
That's wonderful. That's good news. They're going to be really excited to hear this. Thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate you.
Okay, like I said, how beautiful was that? That tribute at the end. Neither of us knew that Dr. Repeat had passed, and she had that lovely tribute to speak such kind words about him. He really was an influential person, and I was working at having him on my show because, as I mentioned to so many people here on my show before, that my partner at Ona's, Ona's husband, who is our mad chemist, I call him. The reason that Ona's is able to carry high percentages of the bioidentical progesterone creams products is because of a patent that apparently Dr. Repeat purchased this patent and let it go inactive. So it's under his name, but he let it go inactive so that anyone can make higher percentages of progesterone cream, which comes in extremely handy for people with catamenial epilepsy, ADHD, autism, you name it, PMDD, any number of different types of issues, even brain inflammation. So we're so grateful to him for having done that. That means it will for, and now that he's passed, it will just forever be available to people to manufacture those products at those strengths. So that's amazing, genius, generous, and wonderful. And hopefully it stays that way and the FDA doesn't get their greasy, dirty little fingers in there and try to change things. Anyway, so please go into the show notes to reach out to Benedicta. She's going to be joining the estrogen dominant support group and she will be hireable. Is that a word? You can reach her at the biochemnordic.com as of the online thyroid specialist. All right, friends, thank you so much for this great bittersweet episode, and we will speak with you soon. Woo!